Hey, family. I am an alcoholic and an addict, and my problem is Marcia. And today, if you're here, then you've already heard, we are going to talk about sex. Let's talk about sex, baby. Let's talk about you. So I've got that song stuck in my head. I go to a lot of meetings. I always hear in meetings whenever this topic comes up, you know, we don't talk about this enough. And it's a really, really important topic. So rather than continuing to add to that, we're going to talk about sex. So I'm just going to put it out there for everyone to make sure that you understand that we're going to be talking about all aspects, as much as we can within the time frame that we have. You might hear some fun things that'll make you laugh. You might hear some things that are going to bring you back here to your childhood or major traumatic events that have happened. So I'm going to ask you now to make sure that you are where your feet are. You are where your feet are right here, right now. We are in a safe place, right? We're going to do our best to make sure that, this is a safe environment. Know your triggers. If you need to reach out to somebody, have them on speed dial. If you need to talk to anybody, reach out after the group. Please do not walk away from this feeling any sort of any ill feelings, or if you're feeling scared or unsafe, please make sure you reach out to somebody. I have to put that out there for everybody, because usually when somebody hears sex, it's all, everybody gets shy and embarrassed, and we're talking about, you know, whether or not he can get it up or whether or not she can do it, blow it right, or whatever it is. There's a lot more to it than that. So I just want to make sure that I have everything covered. I see you smiling, Matt. make sure we have everything covered and that you understand you are in a safe place. So, this idea came out of my head. Let's put this together and let's talk about this. This is something that, I sometimes have a challenge with, but, I've just recently started going to SLAA meetings, and that's sex, love, avoidance. I can't remember what the other A is. See how new I am to this, but my recovery is based on learning. And the people that I've asked to speak today, I've heard some pretty incredible things from them, and I want to share that with you. I have my own things that I'm going through. Small example I can give you all about my bed that's 3 feet away from here, and I get scared to sleep in my bed. I've got a lot of childhood issues and things like that associated with it. So I've got a beautiful bed. It's expensive. It's amazing. It's awesome. And I sleep here on my couch, or I'm my lazy boy, until I met my partner, who I currently, we've been dating for a while. We've known each other for a couple of years. She came to visit me a few six weeks ago, and I slept in my bed, and it was awesome. And I'm counting down the days till she comes back. eight days, eight sleeps, and she'll be back, and I'll be able to sleep in my bed properly again. And not only that, but I'm also sleeping in my bed with somebody who I am connected with on all levels, including sexually. And it, I'll tell you right now, it's amazing to actually have sex with somebody you want to have sex with that is connected with you. It's an amazing thing. It's awesome. And I never thought that before. It was just something that I had to do in order to make money, to keep my addiction going. Something that I had to do because that's the role that I was playing in the relationship. And I'm learning so many different things. So I'm going to stop talking now. And I'm going to turn the meeting over to, we have Natasha, and then Tracy H, Maani, and different elements, different aspects they're bringing to this. And they're all from different walks of life and different points in their recovery. So I hope you enjoy it. And then we'll open it up for conversation afterwards. So Natasha, thank you very much for being here. You can take it away.
Hi, thank you for that introduction, Marcia. I'm Natasha. I'm a sex addict. I have been going to SLAA for a little less than a year now. And I wanted to talk a little bit about what sex and love addiction can be, because I think a lot of times, most of our information comes from the media, right? Popularized media. And they always get it wrong because they want us to take in some certain message that has nothing to do with the actual addictions or professions, right? Lawyers, I'm a lawyer. We don't always go to court. In fact, I never go to court, and I hope I never see one for any purpose. But on TV, they make it seem like this like really grandiose, very fancy job, when, as a matter of fact, most lawyers just sit in rooms and read papers and sweatpants. And so sex addiction can be, sex and love addiction can be lots of things, but I think it comes from, some of the tenets come from the core of having past relationships that have created some dependencies on you, or some have activated some triggers within you that cause you to act in a certain way that is just a little bit abnormal to how we should be approaching relationships. And so one of these things could be loneliness, right? Having that feeling of loneliness that can only be subsided by having the presence of another person. But we get lonely quite often as people, right? Many people who have addictions, I mean, you get lonely and then you do your addiction so you can feel something. And for people who are sex and love addicts, it's the sex part or the love part, really intense, clingy love. And they can do this with one person, or they can do this with multiple people, right? And so that's where you get this very big misconception about promiscuity. It's not present for every single sex and love addict, right? Promiscuity is not like a guaranteed thing. And you also have not being able to just have good relationships, right? We're not just talking about sex relationships, but also friendships, good and valuable friendships. I can only speak from my perspective, of course, but as a woman, I think it's quite discouraged to have women friends, right? It's quite discouraged because from the time you are an adolescent, you are encouraged to date the opposite sex. And you haven't even figured out your sexuality, really. You haven't figured out who you are, what your boundaries are, who you would even love. And people are telling you immediately, you should be thinking about having a boyfriend. And you can even see it in family conversations from the time you're around 10 or 11, at least as a girl, people will ask you immediately, oh, do you have a crush on somebody? Do you have a boyfriend? And it's kind of really pushed on you. And so I think that perpetuates this system where women are not able to connect with each other. And then you form a lot of male connections, but those can be very transactional when you're thinking about the exchange of love, right? So you exchange sex for love sometimes in those relationships, especially when you don't know what your boundaries are and what you're looking for and what you're supposed to say or do in a relationship, right? You're very young. And so you can compromise yourself quite a lot. And then you find that you only know how to do transactional relationships. And it becomes really hard to connect with other people genuinely. And so you might start lying and saying that things are going better than they are going in your relationships, or that you don't need girlfriends, right? And we all know that that's not true. People need people. People need people that are like them in order to connect with. And so I think that sex addiction can look and feel lots of different ways. And just like food addiction, it is something that we need, right? We need interpersonal relationships and it's unavoidable, but how can we do that in a healthy way? And so I want to share more about me now and how I came into SLAA. For me, it was a really tough journey. So I had what they would deem an open relationship with my wife, with my spouse. And we had done that for a little while. And I had engaged with somebody sexually that I became obsessive about, like very, very obsessive about. And unlike other times where I guess I just thought, oh, I have a high sex drive and it's okay to be having sex with multiple partners many, many times a week. I didn't think anything of it because it didn't I thought it didn't disturb the rest of my life. I found out that I had an obsession with this person, and him and I engaged, I identify as bisexual, him and I engaged in ways that are not appropriate to engage when you are in a marriage. I did things that would not be like deemed as okay in my marriage. And From there, I was really unable to control myself after that. And I was having a very hard time finding the value in my marriage, because I felt like my marriage was standing in the way of this obsession that I had developed. And so I spent a long time battling that. I have depression, and I was working on my depression with a therapist. And I think that this situation really caused me to have severe depressive episodes, because I was having, I wasn't able to see this person, and I wasn't able to hear from them. And so it caused very, very severe depressive episodes. And we kind of worked through that, but the portion where I was able to control myself and my habits really never came about, right? And I was just trying to find outlets to get that feeling, that loneliness feeling, that void of missing the obsession, trying to take it out of me, right? Constantly. And so then I got into a place where I was just constantly lying and cheating, and I needed to get out of it. And so my automatic response, because I was raised Catholic, was to turn to religion. And I just thought, Jesus is going to save me. And I started going to church, and it was one of the worst experiences, you know, grown up. I grew up and found out so much about myself, you know, being part of the LGBTQ community. It's hard to go to church sometimes. You have to really find something that works for you. Being a person of color, sometimes it's really hard to go to church. You have to find something that's very, very right for you. And so I had all these barriers, and I was just trying out churches like you try out shirts, just trying to see anything. I was just trying to build enough guilt to stop doing my habits. And I told my therapist this, and they said to me, why don't you try SLAA? And I thought, oh no, I'm not an addict. I don't have any problems here. And I went on some of the websites, and I listened to stories of women talking about withdrawal. And I was crying, because it was exactly how I felt. And so I decided to join, a meeting, and I instantly felt so connected to the group of people that were speaking. I have never felt more genuinely seen or heard than I did at those meetings. You know, you have this really, really huge wall being removed between you and other humans, where you can have this very, very honest connection, and you can say, hey, I'm fucking up badly, a lot, and I don't know what to do about it. And you have this group of people that just decides that they care about you. They just go, okay, we'll take you as you are right now, and we care about you. And I have had so many wonderful, genuine connections come out of that group, that it has created more honesty in me. You know, it has created more honesty where I can be honest with myself, where I can say like, hey, I didn't do my bottom line behavior. Great, pat on the back. But also, am I doing other behaviors that could lead to it? Yeah, I am. I'm continuing to do those things because I'm being triggered and I'm not addressing it. So you can have a win and you can have a loss. And I had a really tough week this week. So it's very hard, I think, when you have the ability to do something, right? When you have the ability to do something, but then you have to just figure out how to control yourself. I think that's really hard. So I was away from my wife for the week for work, and I was totally alone, and I had, you know, just by myself. And I was in the place where my qualifier lives. And I thought many times that, you know, you have these intrusive thoughts of, I'm going to go just connect with them. I'm going to go see them. And I didn't do it because I thought, oh my goodness, somebody's going to call the police on me. I'm not prepared to go to jail. I don't have my wits about me to enter the justice system. But I didn't do it. but there were a few other people that I had been intriguing with, which is basically flirting, right? Intriguing is flirting. Flirting with in order to kind of satisfy myself during that time. And I talked to my therapist before I left, and I deconstructed what I wanted out of the interaction versus what I was going to get out of the interaction. You know, what I wanted was to feel the way my qualifier made me feel. I wanted to have this immense amount of connection and joy and feeling special with someone. And what I was going to get was sex with somebody that I'm not so attracted to and I'm not connected to emotionally. And so before I left, I had decided that, you know, I'm not going to do this. I'm not going to have sex with this person. And of my own volition, I said no to this person. I said, no, we're not going to meet up. And then I didn't for an entire week, no matter how triggered I felt or how much time I had on my hands. I just decided to use it constructively and do something else. I said, distract, distract, distract. What can you do? Just distract yourself, literally anything. Just organize papers, fold your clothes, go downstairs and socialize with people, call people that you haven't connected with in a long while. Just text everybody that you know and see who text messages back. And in doing that, during that time, somebody from SLAA reached out to me and said, hey, how are you doing? We miss you, because I've been traveling so much. I haven't been able to attend my regular meeting. And it meant so much to me. It was exactly what I needed. And I could be honest with that person and say out loud, I'm not doing good. And this is really hard, but I don't want to do it. And I don't want to keep doing it. And so even though I did some behaviors that are not on my top line, there, I didn't do my bottom line, you know, and I stuck to it. And I think that coming out of that week successful is the first time ever in like a couple years where I was able to like stand my ground and say, no, I'm in charge and I am in control of my life. And I'm not going to just let all of these intrusive thoughts take over and push me to do things that I regret, that are not good for me and don't serve me in any way. I was able to do that. And I walked out feeling successful. And then I was able to travel and see my wife and have a connection with somebody who loves me and sees me. I just had to wait a little while. And I don't have to do it with other people because I have this amazing person who loves me so much. And even with all of these issues around sex and love that I have, they're there for me. And I think that that is very rare. It's a very rare thing to find. And so I'm really grateful this week for having meetings. I'm grateful this week for having connections with people who are strangers who just care about me, who let me be myself, who let me be authentic, who helped me create less space in my marriage between me and my wife, because I get to be genuine. I genuinely went away. I did not do my bottom line behavior. And when I saw my wife, I had a genuine connection with her because I didn't have my addiction ruling my life this week. So I'm very, very grateful to have Slaw. And I think that in terms of, for people who maybe don't identify as sex and love addicts, I think that sometimes we don't realize how much sex and love are occurring in our lives in negative ways, right? Having negative relationships. You may have had sexual assault or molestation in your past. Those things leak into your interpersonal relationships today. The language that you get and the messaging that you get about how you're supposed to live your life, and this especially is true for me, homophobia, right? Light homophobia is what I'll call it, where it's not straight up, I hate gay people, but it's just a little bit of, oh, well, you know, if you have the choice, because you're bisexual, why don't you choose to be with in a heterosexual relationship, you know? Or could you make your gay relationship look more heterosexual for acceptance purposes? Or can we define your same-sex relationship as male and female in some way based on your gender expression? Because it makes us more comfortable. And all of that is like very light homophobia that seeps into your mind and can ruin your interpersonal relationships, because it can cause you to not connect genuinely with people that you would have a really good companionship with, because you're afraid that you would look to the outside world as though you're in a same-sex relationship. So what if you emotionally connect with the same-sex person? Have your emotional connection, fill your bucket. Why not? It serves you. But we have all of these things in society that stop us from doing that. And I think those are different ways in which sex and love addiction can enter into all of our lives and us not notice it. It's quite insidious, and we don't get to address it a lot because it's very taboo to talk about sex and to talk about inadequacies in sex or over hypersexualization of yourself or others. But I think exploring it at least and how it relates to your addiction, it can be really helpful, right? And so it's helping me also explore other parts of my life, and also making sure I have more balance and moderation in other places, right? If I can do it here, then maybe I can do it other places. So I think that is my time. And I appreciate everybody listening to me and allowing me in this meeting. I do have to jump in a little bit, like a couple minutes, because again, I'm traveling, but I really, really appreciate your time and energy. And thank you.
Thank you so much, Natasha. Well, that was absolutely wonderful. You almost had me in tears. You're so right. Everything you said. Oh my gosh. My name's Tracy and I'm a woman in recovery. I have a disease of alcoholism, not alcoholism, alcoholism. It's always going to be there. So for me, I spoke at a meeting and Marcia's like, oh my gosh, can you talk? Can you talk here? I don't think I have anything great, but I will tell you what works for me. So I can tell you that I had a baby when I was 16 and my mother forced me to get married to the father. And I was back to the house 2 weeks later because I hated it. I hated being married. And he always wanted sex. She said, what do you expect? He's a teenager. He was 17. And so for me, sex also she said, you know, wouldn't last a year. So I stayed married out of spite for 6 years. And for 6 years, I hated sex. He had sex. I was just the vehicle that he laid on. And I finally left him and I met someone else. And in the beginning, it was like really nice and staring into each other's eyes and all this, and made me feel good inside, like almost scared of these feelings. I never had these feelings before. And things went along pretty great after that. But what happened is he developed alcoholism. He was addicted to drugs. He stayed out more nights than he came home. I stayed with him for 14 years. And the reason I did that is because, you know, we were married and I really wanted to believe that, you know, through thick and thin that you would, you know, could work this out. And, you know, he didn't come home and everything like that. But when he came home on a coke high and an alcohol high, I don't know which one was higher. He always wanted to have sex. And, you know, over the course of the years, I found it just easier to pretend that I was enjoying it. So he would just pass out. He never got off. He couldn't perform. He was drugged up. He was, you know, he had alcohol on board. So, but that 14 years had me feeling like I so unworthy, like my body didn't matter to anybody but me. And even then I was just so ashamed of like staying in a relationship and being treated like a blow up doll, pretty much, you know? Anyway, he died in a car accident. And that was the worst part of my life, because I had to tell, by this time I had 5 kids, I had to tell the 5-year-old and 11-year-old that their dad died. That was the hardest thing in my entire life, was having to do that. So moving forward, you know, being so unworthy, and guys didn't approach me. And I had a guy friend tell me that guys don't approach you because you're too much work. I'm like, I don't know what that means. I don't know what that means. And they said, because you just have this aura around you that you expect a lot. And like, you're not easy. If he only knew. So anyway, I met this gentleman, and he was the first person who ever paid attention to me. And I was in a relationship with him for 5 to 6 years. And the reason I stayed, and I learned about this in my fourth step, my motives, because he paid for things. I was twice married, 5 kids. Who wants that? Who wants that? I was told that, you know, I'm never going to find anybody. So he was also another one that, you know, when guys wake up with a hard on and they expect, if it's hard, it's my job. It's my job to take care of it. And that's what I got out of that relationship, was that's my job, whether I wanted to or not. You know, he was always wanting to try kinky things. I went along a few times, but it just wasn't my bag. What he did do, though, is he arranged a group date rape for me. And I wasn't a drinker back then in any of this stuff. And, you know, we had dinner, and I left the table with the wine that was sitting there. And I came back, and they said, just finish your wine and we'll go. And I'm like, I'm all set. You know, I never finished my wine. And he goes, well, just go finish it. And so I did. And I don't remember a lot of the night, but I do remember that I opened my eyes. I looked up from what I was doing, and I had this moment of clarity. And I'm like, what the fuck am I doing? What is going on? And it's this other couple. And I was blown away. I grabbed clothes and I put them on. I don't know whose they were. I drove home. Don't remember driving home. Don't remember any of that. And I went into my house and I went to bed, I guess, because that's where I woke up. And my boyfriend was next to me in my bed, in my house. Don't even know how he got there. And he says, you know how much I fucking love you. And I didn't know what to do. And I knew I was drugged, and I felt weird, and I had never done drugs. And I was an ER nurse in a community where I knew like all the police around the area, very small area. I worked in Lawrence, and the stateies would come in because, you know, when we had gang violence, they would always come in. I did not feel safe enough to go get tested and do a rape kit or do anything, because it's a small community, and I was afraid of having to tell my story and go to court. And well, he was my boyfriend. You went there willingly. And I can just see where this is going. So I kept my mouth shut and didn't say anything. So after that, you know, because I didn't really have the experience of dating or anything during all these years, you know, I had these three men, and I dropped out of high school when I had the baby, and I didn't go to college till later. So I just missed a lot of these informative years. So all of a sudden, I don't know what happened to me. I went fucking nuts. Every time I went out somewhere, alcohol was involved. I would, if a guy looked at me and bought me a drink, I would take him home, or he would take me home, and I would fuck him. And you know what? I don't even know why. I've left my sister at the restaurant. I left my friends at the restaurant. But what I did do is I had them take out their ID, and we took a picture of it just to be on the safe side in case nobody found me the next day. We rarely went to my house. I had 2 kids left at home. The others were off. They were older. And so I did that a couple of times. Other times I went to their place. I had no idea where it was, you know. And it was like this, this needing to feel like this connection of intimacy. It's like, I needed my vagina filled, and I don't even know why, because I'd been missing something for so long. And of course I saw when Sally met Harry, and, you know, I'm like, oh my gosh, if she can fake that in a restaurant, where, how come I can't have that in the bedroom or wherever in the car, you know? So, I literally went nuts, and it wasn't even like, and although it was a brief time that I felt that connection. Like I felt wanted, like somebody wants me, you know? And then it was over for them. then I was just like, okay, thank you very much. And either I would leave or I say, you got to go. And, you know, do you want my number? No, I know where to find you at the bar if I need you. So there was a lot of one night stands. Some of the people I knew from before, some people, you know, in the neighborhood, not in the neighborhood, but through my life, or and some people I didn't even know. And I went nuts like that for 6 months. I can't even tell you. I drove out in the rainy night at 12 o'clock at night to have sex with somebody in their car. And it was just all about me. I just kept this, I was missing something, and I just needed that closeness, that attention, whatever it was. So that went on, and I just said, you know, this is, after that driving in the rain at midnight, I just said, you know what, I'm done with this. You know, I want a partner for life. I was 46 at the time. I want a partner. I want to get married, you know, and, so what I did is I went online and, I met my husband, and, I had a long list of what I wanted in a man, what I wanted. And the list was long, and I put it out there, and each man I talked to, I said, can I read you my list? Some of them were like, oh my gosh. And I said, well, you should be asking me these same questions if you're looking for a wife, you know? And one of my things was what I said was, I asked about finances. You know, if you're in your 40s, you don't have retirement or something, you know, no, thank you. You know, if you have not been married, had kids, or taken care of a sick relative, you don't know what sacrifice is. I had kids, and I had two boyfriends who would just stalk me and be pissed if I said, you know what, I'm not going to see you this weekend, I'm going to spend time with my kids. What do you mean? They said, you know, so that was really important to me, that somebody who knew about sacrifice. And, you know, somebody who was active, and somebody who enjoyed sex, and somebody who made sure that their partner was having as much enjoyment as they were. And I think I used different words, but it was along those lines. And one thing I made clear is that I don't own the hard-on, and I will never own someone else's hard-on. You know, being in bed with a man who turns over in the morning with a hard-on and thinks it's my job to take care of it, I was done with that. I was so done. So, and you had to have good teeth. You had good, you know, you see the doctor, you take care of yourself. And so my husband, at the time, he thought it was hysterical, and we talked on the phone for 6 or 7 weeks. And the first night we met, because, we weren't scheduled to meet, but I said, yeah, come over, and we'll leave, and we'll just go out somewhere. So he came over, my girls were out for the night, and I knew the minute he walked up my steps that I was going to marry him. And he said the same thing later on. It was amazing. So don't you know, we're on the back porch, we're making out, and one of my daughters comes in, and we're like, oh. So we left, because I needed to take him for a ride, because I will never, ever, ever get married again, I said, without having sex first. I need to know what's down there. I need to know how he performs. I need to know shit, you know? So we got this hotel, and of course I felt like crap because he used to eat at the restaurant all the time. And we got a room for the night, and it was magic. And, you know, at first I'm thinking, oh, this is just new. This is just new, the magic, you know, all that stuff. But what did it for me, and Marcia knows this, we had sex all night long, and the next morning he still went down on me. Who does that? Nothing, nobody I know. Oh my gosh. So it was just, oh my gosh, it was magic. And I thought, okay, we'll see where this goes, because really that's probably it, you know? And so he, you know, we kept talking, and we would talk for hours on the phone. And then he called and said, look, let's have a real date, you know, we'll do. And I said, well, I'm busy this weekend, but you're welcome to join me. I said, so my dad's gay. He died a few years ago, but I said, my dad's visiting. And so we're going to this gay bar in Methuen, Norm's White Horse, the best food. And, three other friends, my three friends that are also gay, you know, cause they called me the fag hag at work. I don't know why, but anyway, I don't think that was nice. But so he said, no problem. So don't you know, he shows up at the restaurant in a black and white wool checkered flannel shirt. Lord have mercy, my dad wears the same shirt. So it was great. It was really, really good. But that night we met though, when I had my list of requirements. And the thing he said to me, right before he came over that first night, he said, I do have something to tell you. And I'm like, oh my gosh, what is it? Cause I'm shaking. And he says, I'm missing some fingers and toes. I said, okay, are you in pain? He said, no. I said, but your teeth are good. That's really all I care about. So he is absolutely amazing. And, he's been with me through thick and thin. He was married to the woman who didn't drink, the woman who became an alcoholic in a very short period of time. And he didn't even know half what I did or anything because he just didn't know. So he knows now. That's the one thing I love about Zoom. He heard my whole story. He heard everything. And so, one of the things though is what I've learned about in my fourth and also about just in general is, I was missing that physical experience and connection of the bodies. I read somewhere that sex is the definition of admiring the flesh of the two souls of each other. And we have that. I am like, I'm so lucky. I'm so blessed that I have this man in my life. And, one of the big things that we talked about before we got married 15 years ago was sex between two people is whatever you want it to be. You both have to be comfortable. But what I said is that, it's like, it can be anything, but communication is key. He is the first man that I've actually said to him, where to touch me, how to do it. And if you're not doing it right, back away, because I will do it myself. And that's the other thing I learned. I learned how to masturbate during all these years because I couldn't get a man to get me off. And I think it was more like in me. I mean, I could put Meg Ryan to shame when I'm alone, let me tell you. And the most in one sitting, get this, one sitting, 21 orgasms by myself. Thank you very much. No sex toys, no nothing. Although I did used to use cucumbers, because if you put a cucumber in the microwave for 20 seconds, it acts like what you want it to act like, lube it up a little bit, bam, two hands, you're fine. One here, one there. We're good to go. I'm telling you. And I honestly did, because I had kids in school and in college, I can't afford batteries for toys. So I bought vegetables, and that worked. Happily married today, but I still masturbate. Just because you're married doesn't mean that you're just like, oh, I can only have an orgasm if my husband's here. Well, I'm home all day and I'm an afternoon girl. So there are some afternoons that I just can't wait. I mean, I did call him one time, Stephen, why don't you come home early? Because I'm ready. And he laughed and he said he couldn't leave work. I said, okay, I'll start and finish without you then. And that was the day he came home, 21 orgasms. Most of the time I can have like 6, 7, or 8. And when we're together, I can still have 6, 7, or 8. And bam, 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 But that's because we have communication. That's because I tell him exactly what I want, how I want it. And he does the same to me. And this man who wakes up with the heart on every morning at the age of 65, hello. It's my birthday. I can choose whether I want to do something about that or not. And I got to tell you, I love this man more than anything in the world. And there are many mornings I take care of him because I'm up at 2 or 3 or 4 in the morning. My day's half over by the time he gets up at 7 or 6. And I'm already, my mind's already going. I don't have time for this, but I'll help you out right there, bud. I got you covered. And so one of the things that my friends ask me, what we talk about is I highly encourage men and women, if you think you're serious about someone, take them for a ride, go have sex. I don't know about you, but for me, if I get surprised after I'm deep mentally and emotionally, and I see something that I can't live with, then or they don't know how to perform, they don't know what to do with it, I don't know what I would do. So my thing is, if sex, even my daughters, take them for a ride. Don't get married without taking them for a ride. Don't even get serious. You got to find out what the sex is like. Then everyone says, well, sex isn't everything. Yeah, they also say money isn't everything either. But guess what? If you have both, you're in good hands. Literally. All right. I'm Tracy. I think my time is up. So thank you very much. And you all have a great day.
Oh my God. Thank you so, so much, Tracy. You had me laughing so hard. My name is Ma'ani and I'm an alcoholic. I have notes on my phone so I can remember what I want to say. I don't know how I'm going to follow that up, but I'll try my best. So I wanted to do the what it was like, what happened and what it was like now, or what's it like now. So when I was younger and I started to learn about sex, I was like, oh my God, I'm actually I think I might be too ugly for this. I don't think anyone would be ever attracted to me. For some reason, I think I just got that message from the media and whatnot. I just thought that and it's just the way we grow up, my body wasn't right. Everything was awkward. My skin wasn't the perfect condition, all of these things. And so, but I did really, really, really want to feel like I was beautiful and I was the center of someone's world. It wasn't so much the pleasure that was interesting to me. It was just that someone had their eyes on me and they could witness me as a beautiful person and they wanted me. That's the only thing I really desired. So as I grew up and I realized I'm gay and whatnot, I grew up Muslim. So I was oh my God, well, first of all, I can't do this. I can't do the relationship part because the world's not going to allow it. And my body isn't where it needs to be. I'm not good enough for this. So I am just going to do the thing that society wants me to do. I'm just going to be the perfect specimen of a good girl, a good, attractive girl. And I don't care what my personality is. I don't care what I want. I don't care about anything like that. I just want to feel wanted. So I started drinking a lot and I started trying to find sex without any intimacy, without any relationship at all. And I was like, this is what it's supposed to be. I'm supposed to be this perfect specimen of a girl. Basically, yeah, a blow up doll, you know? And so, a blow up doll doesn't have any thoughts or opinions. She just lies there and takes it, you know? So I couldn't conceptualize the idea of a relationship. So every time I would hook up with somebody and they wanted to talk to me more, they wanted to have a relationship, I would just start gagging and I'd have so much anxiety that I physically felt nauseous. I couldn't breathe. And I started drinking even more. And so I'd end up sloppy drunk on these dates and just horrible, horrible dates. Just me barely awake, trying to make sure that the person feels I'm the hottest girl in the world, lying about orgasms, lying about how good this is, and making sure that they know that they're the most beautiful person in the world. And it was always what they wanted and how I felt. And that was the basis of my life for a lot of years. And then I got sober. And the thing about dating at that time is that I kept meeting really wonderful people. I kept meeting the most interesting women, the most philosophical and romantic and loving people. And I could never be in a relationship with them. I couldn't bring myself to do that because, well, I'm unworthy. I'm not ready. I am emotionally destroyed by life right now. And so I'm just a shell of a person in this room with you. And I was just not present at all. And so, and I kept wondering, why isn't my body responding in I'm not having orgasms, of course, I'm not enjoying it physically. I'm completely disconnecting from my mind when I'm doing this. And so I'm like, well, why can't I actually have an orgasm with somebody who is a wonderful person? I trust them. And I didn't understand what that meant. So I was like, okay, I guess I'm just the kind of person who can only, make myself come. That's what I thought. I could never have a relationship where I could enjoy the sex and the relationship at the same time. So I got sober. And when I was 6 months sober, I got into a relationship. And the only reason I believe that I had a little crush on this person, but it wasn't like a big overpowering love. But then they came to me and they're like, I'm so into you. I like you so much. And they told me they loved me after the first week of dating. And I was like, oh my gosh, this person really wants me. They really want to be around me. Like, they must really like me as a person, as who I am. When I'm only 6 months sober, I barely know who I was sober at that point. I don't know how they would have loved me if I didn't even know who I was at that time, you know? So I was like, yeah, sure, we'll get into a relationship, blowing past all of the guidelines about you should wait till you're a year sober until you like actually like get in a relationship. And I'm like, no, I'm going to do it now. Everyone in the like room at the time was like, no, you guys are going to be great together. It's going to be fine. Which I don't understand why like the red flags didn't ping off in my head at the time. I just thought, oh, I'm emotionally intelligent, so I'm ready, you know? And so I get into this relationship and I started to like feel like itchy at night. Like every time we would go to sleep, I couldn't sleep. Like I kept having like itches all over my body. And I was like, I don't know why I feel like my skin is crawling. And like, we would just be hanging around the house and like, they would like slap my ass. And like, while I'm doing dishes or taking out the trash, and I'm feeling resentful because I don't really like how they don't contribute to the house. And I'm feeling angry because of last week or this week's problems. And then they would slap my ass and I'm just like, ugh, that's not even hot right now. And I just, my skin would keep crawling. And I talked to my sister about it and she's like, well, anxiety can kind of do that to you. And I'm like, no, I'm fine. Like, I'm a perfect girlfriend. I do everything right. I make sure that they're happy. I clean the house. I cook dinner. Like, why is my body reacting to the situation when I'm doing everything I can? And I just started to realize that like context, like I started to read books about sex because I was like, I don't understand what sex is at all. Like, I never got talked to about like what it's supposed to be like. Like Tracy, you were saying you teach your daughters about like, jump on it before you get married. It's like exactly that. Like, I was never taught to jump on it. Like, I never was taught to enjoy it or figure out what your body is telling you before you start a relationship. And I basically was, my body was reacting to the context of the situation. She was like, this girl is not it. This relationship is not it. I'm not here for you right now. You're crawling because I don't feel comfortable within myself. And my mind was denying the way my body was feeling. And she was like, no, this is fine. Everything's fine. And it was just like, never, I didn't believe I was worthy of demanding the kind of sex and relationship that I wanted. And I, in this book, I was started to read about how, the problem is with a lot of women is that some people want sex. They can, you can come home in the middle of like a work day and drop your pants and you're ready for a bing, bang, boom, like hot monkey sex, you know? But like some people need the candles, they need the date, they need the like to turn down the lights, they need everything to be quiet, they need the house to be clean, to the kids to put to bed, you know, like you need to reduce the stress to the point where you can feel like, oh, there's nothing that's going to be on my mind that's going to stop me from having a good time. And I didn't understand that distinction at all. I thought that everyone could have TV sex where you can just like throw each other up against the wall every single time and everyone's going to come in 2 seconds, you know? And like, that's just not how it was at all. I definitely need the trust. If we had a fight that day, I'm not going to be present. I'm not going to enjoy it. It's not going to be fun for me. And I can ask for that. I can tell the person, I don't want to do this today. I need a plan. I need to shave. I don't want hot, dirty bathroom sex like when I was drunk, you know, like that's gross to me now. And my body's not happy and she's yelling at me. And so I didn't realize that I was worthy of asking that of a partner. And I didn't realize that I could say no to those things. And I think that's where I was really struggling with before in sobriety and now after in sobriety. And so I was like, wow. So now all my thoughts are clear. I have no barriers. The only thing in this room right now is me, my mind and my body and this person that I don't like, you know? And it's like a highlighter in the situation. I know the problem now. It's not the fact that I'm drinking or the fact that I'm too ugly. It's literally the fact that I just don't feel comfortable. The context of the situation is not good. And so now, what, I don't have sex. I don't, because I don't want to allow someone into my bubble, into my life, until I feel like I have built an intimacy and a trust in the relationship enough to say no and to tell them what I want. Like, some people, when you tell them like, oh, like, I don't like it like this, I like it like that, they get super offended. Like, the ego is all built up and like, oh, I can make you come. Like, that's their, like, that's how they know what's good sex and what's bad sex, is if everyone's orgasming in the first like 30 seconds, you know? And I just don't care anymore about that. Like, I want a good time, whether or not like there's like a finish line. Like, I want to feel special just cuddling, and I just want to feel the intimacy, and I want to feel the pleasure, and I want to feel the holding hands and the cakes and the desserts. Like, I want all of that without the expectation that I have to finish, reach this finish line by the end of the night, you know? And so I realized that I am not going to allow anyone into this presence, into my bubble, into my life, it intimately, until I can feel secure in saying no to those things and saying no to the person who's just there, like, just there because they want to have a good time or take a good picture to send to their family and like take a, it, like, we look good together and that's why we should be together kind of relationship, you know? And so I still struggle myself with acknowledging that foreplay starts at the last, when you finish sex. So like, if you have sex and that night you guys finish around 8, foreplay starts the minute you finish until the next time you have sex. So everything you do is build up. It's not flapping your ass in the middle of the kitchen, but it's like holding your hand and telling you, I'm here for you and I've got you and I'm holding you and I'm gonna take care of you emotionally, mentally, physically, you know? That's the kind of foreplay that I want. And then the really, you know, hot and heavy stuff, that will just be like an added benefit to all the foreplay that we've had emotionally over the last week, you know? And so that's like the most clarifying fact for me, is that like, I don't have, like, as long as I'm taking care of myself, like sexually, like I'm masturbating, I figure out what I like. If you are using a cucumber, I would recommend using a condom, because girl, you don't know where that cucumber has been. But like, but for real, like, I think that like, as long as I'm taking care of myself emotionally, physically, like using the right toys and vibrators and using like ethical porn, then I don't need a person to come into my life until I can trust them intimately, until I can trust the way that they handle rejection, until I can trust the way that they talk to me, until we can talk about sex together without immediately having sex. And until we can, like if I can't talk to you about the way I like to have sex before we do, and if that conversation is awkward and clumsy and like such a stressful situation where they're like, oh, so am I not good at it? Like, am I not good at sex for you? And you're like, no, it's just like a cute little direction. Like, it's not like a big deal that like you can't do it like that or this or that. If I can't talk to you in an open and loving way and it's a fun conversation, then it's not fun for me. It's not worth it for me. It's just gonna ruin the time for me. If I don't want to be in a room with someone who is not, yeah, completely welcoming to that, to those facts and those conversations. So yeah, I think I respect myself and I respect love and intimacy much more now. If you guys need books to recommend, I have like 3 that I think are amazing. And I think men need to read them, or masculine centered people need to read them, so that we're like pushing this information out there about how to have sex in an ethical, emotionally validating way. So that's all I got. I hope I can wrap it up. I'll pass it to Marsha now. Thank you, everybody.
Awesome. Thank you so much, Ma'ani and Natasha and Tracy. That was absolutely amazing. And I thank you so much. And I look forward to hearing a lot more. So yeah, thank you very much.